You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger, Modifiers Chronicles 2. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light. I am J.D. Rieger, and I hope everyone had a good Labor Day this weekend. I hope you didn't have to work, but even if you did, I hope you found a way to enjoy it. This week on the show, we're talking with the one and only Chuck Roast, drummer from the legendary Los Angeles new wave band The Suburban Lawns, and also the L.A. incarnation of The Modifiers, the Memphis punk rock band that I was a latter-day member of. For more background info on The Modifiers, I highly suggest you check out the Dave Catching or Ross Johnson episodes of Back to the Light. Anyway, I had a great conversation in this one with Chuck about both The Suburban Lawns and The Modifiers. But before we run the interview, I want to share the following unreleased Modifiers gem, Neat Depression, recorded in 1986, or maybe 87, and featuring The Suburban Lawns rhythm section of Chuck Roast and Vex Billingsgate. Here it is, Neat Depression. And now, here's me and Chuck Roast. Well, all right, Chuck, once again, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, JD.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So we know each other because of the band The Modifiers. So I guess, you know, if it's cool, I guess we'll start there. First of all, how long were you in the band? What was that around? That was 1985, 1986?
Yeah, it was about 86, 87, I do believe. Okay. Okay. Do you remember the first time you saw or heard of the band out there
when
in LA?
I had never seen them live or anything. The first time I heard of them when I spoke to Billy, the bass player, because the band I was in had broken up and they needed a drummer. So I just went down a few blocks to Billy Bass's studio, and we started playing.
So Billy was playing with Bob and Milford before you were?
Yes, and Dave.
Okay, right. And then how long, you were only in the band, it was like 2 years that you guys played together?
It was like a year and a half. We did a few shows. The initial shows were really good. We were getting good reception from the clubs that we were playing at. And then we just rehearsed a lot. And then we were recording at the end there in 87, I do believe. And in the middle of that.
Yeah, you did some home recording and some studio time.
Yeah, I think that was like late 85, early 86. I had just gotten a Teac Porter One studio cassette, 4-track cassette. And I had taken it to rehearsal. Let's give this a go. And that's the one I shipped off to you.
Yeah, some of that stuff sounds really great. Like, I had never heard a couple of those modifier songs before, and it's, you know, just fantastic to get a hold of them. Especially Neat Depression was a song that I didn't even know existed until you sent it to me.
Yeah, that was our punkiest song.
That's become one of my favorites.
That was one of our punkiest songs. Fast, crazy. Those guys were great.
Was part of what attracted you to being in the Modifiers, was it being able to do like a more straight ahead punk rock thing after the Suburban Lawns?
I wasn't familiar with their music. We just, I brought my drums upstairs, we laced them up, and we hit it off pretty well. I mean, I kind of grew up on that kind of music. They were more traditional, even though they were pretty hardcore punk, but rooted in the blues. You know, and Bob could just rip it off, and Dave was backing up. He was there for a few sessions, and then we became a power trio.
Those live gigs, do you remember, were they still doing lots of live antics at the time? In Memphis, they were known for doing lots of stage antics and, you know, theatrical performances. Was that still a part of the show when you were in the band?
Milford was pretty animated. I mean, he was a great front man, and Bob could just play that guitar. I mean, it was a lot of fun playing with both those guys. But as far as antics, Bob, he's always was a fairly reserved guy.
For sure. Off stage,
yes,
definitely.
Most definitely. I kind of hung out with Milford more, only because he played golf. We played golf. I never knew that we were over at their pad in Redondo, just hanging out one night, and something caught my eye. I looked down, hey, Milf, you play golf? Yeah, Charles, I play golf. So we need to get together and get out there, and sure enough, we did. And, it was a foursome. Three of us were, Milford was late. That's the one thing I do remember. And he showed up. I didn't know anything about him. He showed up, and he had bell-bottom Holy Levi's with red, white, and blue patent leather shoes, purple hair. Let's play some golf. And we're going, okay, Milf, you probably can't even play. And then he got up there first, and, man, he thwapped it down the middle of the fairway there. Well, it turned out he played college.
Wow. You know, Bob played in high school, too. And I play, and I tried several times to get him to pick him back up again, but he never would.
I don't recall doing much with Bob. Bob was pretty much a hermit back then. He was at home. When Melf wasn't working, he worked at a guitar shop at that time, Gene Lease Guitars, right there.
Right.
And I would take my guitars. I play guitar too. not as well as Bob. Bob just had a unique tone and sound that he got. But they were always trying new stuff, new amps, new guitars, all that stuff. He had a great sound.
Yeah. Why did you guys, do you remember why you guys quit playing together like in 87?
It happened during the recording. Who knows? I don't remember. It's all a smoky haze, if you know what I mean. But
yeah.
One day we were recording, and the next day it was all over.
That sounds like Bob, but yeah.
And then I didn't speak to them for a while, and I went to their house out in Redondo, and they were gone. Nobody lived at that place.
Wow.
And that was it.
And did you ever hear from Milford anybody
never
after
heard from
that?
Them again. I've been trying to find them over the years, and I think I've been corresponding with you for quite a while. This goes back to maybe 2003, 2005, when I had first, I did a search for modifiers or Milford and said that.
I remember us talking a while, because I had just created, I think, a modifiers Facebook page or something.
And it said that he had passed away, and I was bummed. These guys are a lot of fun.
It's a shame you guys never got back together. I know that Bob spoke very, very highly of you and Billy. He like really thought that era of the band sounded really good. And when I spoke to Dave Ketching recently, he said the same. He said that was probably, one of his favorite lineups of the band.
Well, the music for me, it just felt natural. And I fell right into it. Billy fell right into it. I'd been playing with Billy since high school. And it just felt really natural, organic, and we rehearsed a lot. Rehearsed more than we played out, that's for sure. We did a handful of gigs. We didn't do that many. I thought we had a chance to do something. And that we were recording with E.J. Emmons, who was our the producer on Suburban Lawn's first record. He actually has the original recordings.
Oh, wow. He still
it's
has
on,
those.
Yeah, 2-inch. Media tape.
I would wonder if it would be possible to get a hold of those at somehow.
I've always thought about that over the years, but EJ's an enterprising guy and probably would have to pay for it. I mean, they're in storage.
Yeah,
he has his setup up here in the mountains, up in Crestline, and I could talk to him about it. I haven't spoken to him for a few years.
One last thing about the modifiers, and I guess this is more, I don't know if this philosophical is the right word, but given everything, all the opportunities the band had, how good they were, and also how many interesting different people were in the band over the years, why do you think it was that nothing ever happened for the modifiers?
That's a good question. Exposure, I think if it was like today, with social media and the internet and all that stuff, even though it is so vast and hard to get noticed, they probably could have, with the right exposure, been out there. We didn't really play any clubs in Hollywood back then. And the scene in L.A. was rapidly changing, going from punk in early 80s to glam to, Guns N' Roses, all that kind of stuff. A lot of the clubs closed down, Starwood. You had to pay to play to get into the whiskey, where we never had to do that. But there weren't as many club opportunities. And, Bob, as much as a great guitar, but he was a tough guy to get along with sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know.
And but he could play that guitar. I mean, he could rip off some licks. And I even spoke to him about, hey, Bob, I really love that lick you just played on that lead, man. You got to do that some more. Well, I played it once, and I don't know if I'll ever play it again. I could be kind of gruff like that.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like him, man. That sounds like classic
and
Bob.
And Milford was more of a happy-go-lucky guy.
Yeah. I didn't know Milford as well. You know, I was, mm-hmm. I was a kid when most of this went down. So, and Bob was more, was closer friends with my dad. Yeah. So that's who I knew the best. And he was always really warm and kind of a fun guy mm-hmm. with me, but I was a kid, you know, so like I could see how that might have brought out a different side in him. Like I never saw the sort of brooding, you know, lonery side of Bob until much later.
He had mentioned some health stuff, and he was he never disclosed what it could, he thought he may have contracted something. Maybe he's just fatalistic or who knows.
He was kind of a hypochondriac. Oh, okay. He and my dad were both like always convinced that whatever bump or whatever they found on them was cancer. And
well, that explains a lot then.
I mean, I guess, in Bob's case, I guess it eventually turned out to be true, but it wasn't for, you know, I remember him saying that kind of stuff, you know, in the '80s. So, does anybody in California still remember the modifiers beside me, you and Dave?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. Nothing was ever played on the radio. The big station out here, and that's still going for alt and punk and that kind of stuff, is K-Rock. But the, you know, the condition of music these days and bands like the Modifiers and alt music in general is pretty difficult.
Yeah, I know that's real. We're still going to try to put some of this music out in 2021. We're looking at putting together, the band did a record in 1981 or 1982 that I think we're going to try to put out first, but I would love to eventually try to get to some of the stuff that you guys did together, because to me, that's some of the best Modifiers recordings.
Yeah, I thought they turned out pretty well, even though I kind of botched the recording a little bit. I should have panned a little bit better, and there's a little bit of phasing. I think I've mentioned that to you past few times.
You don't know from botched. You should hear some of these things I got.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I always like to record, and over the years and back in the old days, it was just a little, you know, with those cassette players, you just push play or record. Those are, I have recordings from 74, 75. There was just on a Kmart cassette, you know.
I've got some pretty old Modifiers tapes from, you know, 1981, 82 that are just barely hanging on. I can imagine 70s tapes are a small miracle.
Well, I think for you, it's definitely a labor of love. And you're going to keep
their
legacy going.
Time out. Before we hear a quick commercial and then the rest of the interview with Chuck Roast, I have to ask you to check out patreon.com/JDRieger. That's patreon.com/JDRieager and become a supporter of me and the show. Subscribers to the Patreon could get access to ad-free versions of this show, exclusive music content, and more. Also, if you know someone who might enjoy this episode or the show in general, please feel free to share it. Everything helps. And now, here's the ad.
Well, switching gears, before I did this interview, I actually listened to the Suburban Lawns self-titled mm-hmm. record, which is it being re-released soon, or has it been re-released?
Released in 2015 on Futurismo Records.
Okay. For some reason, I thought that was a recent thing.
Yeah.
But maybe I just how did that deal come about? Because I know that it was out of print for something like, 35 years previous?
Well, we were, on IRS Records, and they never saw fit to release it on CD. It was released on vinyl and cassette. And over the years, after the band broke up, I guess they don't take too kindly when bands break up midstream. We were recording the Baby EP. It was supposed to be an album, and turned out to be a five-song EP. And then just languished. Nothing ever happened. There was stuff on the internet. People would post stuff. And then a chap from England, we were corresponding with him, and he got the licensing rights from Universal. They still have the master recordings.
And then
he released.
Universal owned it from IRS? Yes.
Yeah, I think okay. IRS was bought out by MCA, which turned into Universal. MCA was part of Universal.
Gotcha.
So they have the masters. And Dell was his name. He bought the licensing rights and also did all new artwork for it, released it on vinyl and CD. Did a really good job.
Yeah, yeah. The remaster sounds great. The digital file I just listened to. And it's amazing. I've actually had a special request in for that record for the, you know, I guess the original copy. I used to work at a record store for a couple of years, and the waiting list is so long that I still haven't gotten a call on that.
I'm still surprised at the interest in the band after all these years. I mean, Suit Tissue definitely had a lot to do with that. But when I listen to it now, which I do occasionally, get a hankering to just throw it in there. It doesn't sound dated to me, if you know what I'm saying.
No, it doesn't at all.
I think it would do well now.
I think it's pretty ahead of its time, actually. I mean, just listening to it and remarking, especially songs like Computer Date seems
ahead of
kind
its time.
Of, you know, yeah, very much
well,
so.
Well, Frankie, Rick Whitney, he worked at a data processing place. And this is before even personal computers were out. And that's where that idea came from. I mean, look what's going on now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lyrics to that are could have been written this year, honestly. It seems, you know, pretty
on point.
Those
songs are all pretty short. I think there's 14 songs on that album, and it's all done in like less than a half an hour. Short and sweet.
Yeah, for sure. That's the way I like them too. Most of my songs are in the 2-3 minute zone as well. When you listen to it, like how do you describe the music of the Suburban Lawns? Because I hear so many different elements, you know, whether it's punk or surf, or there's some ska moments in there, some kind of Devo-y sounding moments in there. I don't know if that's what people would call new wave.
The whole scene back then, we were just a bunch of, I'm not going to say punks, but we were really attracted to that because it was like a do-it-yourself scene. You didn't have to be, you know, classically trained lead guitar player and know all the notes. And so we just got out there and we played, made a bunch of noise, and we eventually got better. But, you know, like the ska tune you're talking about, I actually, the one song I got to add to that album. Frankie wrote the words. I came up with the guitar part, and the rest of the band put their parts on it. And then Billy said, well, let's try doing it ska like this. And that's where that part came in from. So it was, you know, everybody putting their parts in there.
Is it, I mean, you said you were surprised earlier that people were still interested in the band. I guess my question is kind of two part. I mean, you know, I guess, why does that surprise you? And are you gratified by the, you know, the renewed interest in the band and the album
well,
and everything?
I'm pleasantly pleased. And, you know, I think the songs are good. It's different. I mean, we were part of the punks. We got lumped in with the punks and new wave. I don't know if we were really either or. We just played fast. That was our motto. Fast, short, and sweet.
What to you is the difference? What marks the difference between a punk band and a new wave band?
Well, you know, punk was more like Agent Orange, Black Flag, bands like that. We had a few gigs with Black Flag. We actually had a big one at on New Year's Eve at the Olympic Auditorium. It was Black Flag, us, the Blasters, Zachman Trust.
That's an awesome bill.
It was pretty crazy. And the Olympic Auditorium is where they used to have boxing matches back in the heyday. Wrestling, boxing. They used to have roller derby in there, the LA T-Birds. That's where that was. But, you know, we used to play with a lot of those bands. X played with the Go-Go's before they became the Go-Go's that you know today. We used to play at the Mask. So we got, that was the only opportunities. We just would show up and get to play. And eventually, over time, we developed a following. There was more opportunities at clubs to play. There was a lot of clubs to play at.
And after the Suburban Lawns broke up in 83. Why did you guys break up finally?
There's tensions within being in a band. It's like being in a relationship. When it's good, it's good. When it starts to go bad, it goes bad real quick. I just remember we had a show, a local in Long Beach. That's where our studio was at, and that's where we rehearsed. We're unloading our equipment, and next thing I know, people were jostling in the doorway, and that was it. I haven't, that was the last time I saw Sue Tissue. I haven't heard, that was, you know, June of 83. I know there's been sightings of her. She was in town for a while, but nobody knows where she's at now.
Huh. But some of you kept playing just as the Lawns, right?
Yeah, after that, we did the Lawns. That was with Frankie, John, who had quit the Suburban Lawns during the recording of the Baby EP. Tom Corey was in the Fibonaccis. They were a local group. And Lewis played keyboards, and Gloria Dawson was a singer, really good singer. We played for about, that was right before the Modifiers, and we played maybe about 2 years. We did a few recordings, but, you know, just like anything else, didn't last. Then I went to the Modifiers after that.
You mentioned when we spoke on Facebook earlier that you're working on a new project that has some Suburban Lawns ties. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that's Johnny Mark and the Ricks. That was Frankie's band. It's elementary school buddies that I think they just initially were playing guitars and having a good time and started up a band, and they were together for quite a while. But he passed away in 2016.
Sorry to hear that.
Me too. He was a good friend. Even though we didn't keep in touch that much, you know, over the years, I moved out to the Inland Empire. I'm kind of like on an acre of land, kind of. Out here, people think this is the sticks, but it's not. I'm 5 minutes away from civilization. But, you know, my friends in town, Long Beach, which is about 50, 55 miles away. But, he had sent me over some mixes, and he wasn't happy with the mix. And I said, well, why don't you give EJ a try? And EJ had it and was working on it, and I don't think anything ever came of it. And, you know, next thing you know, 4 or 5 years has gone by, and I contacted his wife, Gloria. Hey, how's it going? You know, what's happening with those recordings? Well, nothing. And I said, why don't you let me take a listen and see what you have going on there. It was pretty daunting. She gave me an external hard drive with a ton of files. It was recorded in Pro Tools. I work in Cubase, so I had to import all the files individually. I was going to initially mix, but I had never heard any of the songs. I didn't know what they sounded like, or how they should be put together. So I was able to find some bounced files. And I'm not real familiar with Pro Tools. I was listening to them. I'm going, you know, these sound pretty good. I mastered them. Brought them into my mastering program, and wow, they just jumped out of the speakers. I was going, wow. So that's how I ended up working on that one. 10 tunes turned into 13, and now I'm working on the artwork for it. And I've already delivered the final product to her. What they plan to do with it, I'm not sure yet.
I was about to ask if you knew if there was a release date or anything else or anything in mind.
Soon, I hope. I'm not sure they know what to do as far as releasing, if it's going to be on a CD, if it's going to be vinyl, if it's going to go on to the internet. What's a band to do these days?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, if I can advise in that, you know, some way.
Sure.
You know, that's my dilemma as well all the time, what to do with these new pieces of music that I'm making. If you need some help getting it in Spotify or whatever, let me know.
It's easy to get it on, but, you know, get people to listen to it. It's so vast. It's just so vast. I know there's Bandcamp. I don't know how popular that is. Spotify.
It's pretty popular. And the good thing about Bandcamp is not only can you sell the digital file, but you can sell physical product through there as well if you have it.
Yeah, we're just old school guys, you know. Back in the old days, you would just do your recording, get it mastered, press a record, and get it out there.
Yeah.
There's so many options.
That's more my speed too, mm-hmm. honestly. But I'm trying to get more with it.
To get more with it means putting a lot of time in. It's very time consuming. You know, I have my setup here at home and all the toys and bells and whistles, and it's just trying to get the time to do it because it's very intense, time intensive. To sit and create your tunes, and I mean, there's more time, I guess, with COVID and that situation going on right now. People have more time to stay at home, but you get nervous sometimes.
I'm sort of blessed and cursed that I lost my job due to COVID. So I now have nothing but time on my hands to figure this shit out.
And it was fun when I was pleasantly happy when you asked me to play the drums on that one track. I don't know if anything ever came of it or not.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you what happened with that track off the air actually. But that is still being worked on. But there is sort of a story there.
There's a story on everyone.
Is there anything else that you've been isn't there always a story? Is there anything else you've been working on lately that you want to talk about? Any other projects you have going on?
No other outside projects, just aside from my own stuff that I'm working on. Coming up with tunes and you start playing, record, and come up with riffs. I mean, I'm not a singer. I'm not a guitar player per se, but I play well enough to get my ideas down. And, you know, waiting to find a singer or a lyricist, you just end up doing everything yourself as a demo. You know what that's like. So I've been doing that for a while. I'm always working on something. Mix it down, listen to it in my car. That's where most of my lyrical ideas come up, and, you know, changes for tunes and whatnot. The seeds of doubt.
Yeah, or, you know, imposter syndrome or whatever you want to call it. Perfectionism sometimes, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself that good enough is good enough.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So one day I'll just post it up and I mean, I have some tunes that are ready to go that I recorded quite a long time ago. My dilemma is, you know, I've got a lot of ideas, and then I just need to flesh them out some more. Get lyrics, and that's where, you know, I was actually working on some stuff when Frankie passed away. He was a great lyricist. You could take the mundane and make it into a story. So I had sent him over a tune, and he listened to it, said, yeah, I've got some ideas, and then he passed away. And actually, in 2009, 2012, we tried a couple of ill-fated reunions. Didn't work out.
Why do you think it didn't work out?
Just old. I'm not going to say wounds, just feelings. Who knows? Just didn't work out. Things. Are not the same. They could never be the same. Number one, Sue wasn't there. And we never even did any shows. It was just a big blow up, and next thing you know, it was all over. So I said, the hell with it, I'm just going to start recording at home. Actually, I've been recording on the computer since, 2009, but my kids were small. Their computer broke down. They took mine over and just sat on the back burner, and now that they're all grown up, I have more time to play.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show.
It was a great pleasure. Like I said, we've been corresponding. This is the first time we've spoken to each other since 2005 or something like that. We've kept in touch like that. And I figured eventually we would do a face-to-face or a phone chat or something. But here we are doing a...
For sure. It's good to hear your voice.
Great to hear your voice too. And, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and I see a lot of your stuff coming up, and you're doing a good job promoting yourself, and that's what it's all about. That's the hardest part, right?
Well, it's only because I have nothing better to do right now. I have no excuse not
to
do
it. Well, it's, shit or get off the pot. And when you get off the pot, it's not as hard as you probably thought it was.
Well, thanks very much.
Well, it was great talking to you, JD, and we'll keep in touch.
Sure.
You're now an ally.
That's the show. Thank you to my guest, Chuck Roast. Thank you to Arthur with two H's for the opening theme. Thank you to Joey Pegram for the new closing theme. And until next time, take care, y'all. Part of the Back to the Light podcast network at backtothelight.net.